You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com. We're going to go around the division with our correspondents. I'm joined by everybody's favorite beat writer, Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels. Now, Alden, the last time I saw you last week at Minute Maid Park, everything was going pretty good. And since then, trouble has hit, trouble in the bullpen, trouble in the offense, and injuries in the rotation. What's the state of the team as we speak?
You know, Richard, I'm going to blame this completely on us doing a face-to-face podcast.
Right, you're saying so many good things.
Yeah, I know. You know what? Everything's just pretty much gone wrong at the wrong time for the Angels right now. None of the offensive pieces that they've added have hit yet. I mean, granted, it's been less than a week, but they haven't really seen the results show up on the field at all with regards to David Murphy or David DeJesus or Shane Victorino. Then you see the Astros go out and get Carlos Gomez after they had recently acquired Scott Kazmir. Then they run into this devastating trio of starting pitchers, first with Scott Kazmir, then with Zach Greinke, then with Clayton Kershaw. I mean, it doesn't get any more tough than that. Before that, Mike Trout missed back-to-back days with a wrist injury. Then they get swept on Sunday at Dodger Stadium, which was the day that C.J. Wilson was supposed to start before he decided that he has to go on the DL to eventually get bone spurs removed from his elbow. So everything's just going wrong at the wrong time for the Angels right now. The Astros continue to win. The Astros look really strong. They need to, you know, there's a lot of season left, but they really need to recover here. This is going to be a big week for them to, at the very least, you know, make up a little bit of ground here. I mean, everything looked so rosy for the Angels shortly after Jerry DePoto resigned. They won 17 out of 20 games. You know, they're coming off now their first road trip of six or more games in which they've gone winless since 1999. That's how bad it's going right now for them.
And Alden, let me ask you about C.J. Wilson's surgery, season ending apparently. Was this optional? Or I take it by reading a couple of your articles that maybe not everybody in that clubhouse thought that he should have the surgery. What was happening there?
Well, there's just some, and you know, here's the thing. C.J. Wilson knows his elbow better than anybody else. You know, some people were kind of scratching their heads, a little frustrated by the timing of the whole situation with the trade deadline getting close and all that stuff. And, I mean, I don't know. There were maybe some people in that clubhouse who felt like he could have continued to pitch through it and were just kind of frustrated that he's kind of out for the year at such a really bad time. But, you know, anytime you get into something like that, it's really dangerous because, again, I mean, C.J. Wilson's the only one who truly knows what's going on with his elbow. He's the one who initiated all this because he's the one who went up to Mike Socha and told him, look, I don't know if I can continue to pitch the way it's going right now. He had MRIs done on Friday when they got back into town, when they returned from Houston. And he doesn't believe that he could continue to pitch. And, you know, it's hard to question a guy's motives or a guy's desire when he says something like that because C.J. Wilson's a guy who, he had Tommy John surgery in 2003. He's had surgery to remove bone spurs two other times in his career. If you hear C.J. Wilson say it, he says that he's been pitching through this the entire year. And he did get fluid drained from his left elbow four separate times already.
Oh.
And the one thing that C.J. Wilson says is that his quote was, there's no gray area with this. At some point, the tank is just empty. And in his mind, the tank is empty. He doesn't believe he could give them any more with his elbow the way it is. He says the bone spurs have continued to grow, and they're on all four quadrants of his elbow. And I guess just the whole gist of it is that he doesn't feel like he can continue to be an effective pitcher for the Angels given the way his elbow's going. Now, if you look back at his last three or four starts, I mean, he had a clunker against the Astros earlier this week. But he's been giving them pretty good starts. You know, he's been pretty much C.J. Wilson the last three or four times. But again, I mean, the way he feels is he cannot continue to pitch like this while continuing to be an effective pitcher and without jeopardizing his career moving forward. You know, some players may scoff at that, but that's how he feels, and it looks like he's not going to pitch the rest of the year. Last time we spoke to him, he was awaiting a second opinion by Dr. James Andrews and by Dr. Neil Eletrach. But it looks like this surgery is inevitable. He knows it well. He's had it twice before. And it looks like they're not going to have C.J. Wilson anymore. At the very least, so the Angels do have better starting pitching depth, which we talked about before.
I'm joined by Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com. Brian, a couple of things. Let's start out with the fact that the Astros are 14 games over 500. That's their matching their season high as we record this, and could go 15 over for the first time in 2005. Has Jeff Leno reshaped the team? I think some of us were surprised, I don't know if you were surprised, that he brought in an outfielder, Carlos Gomez, and so A.J. Hinch has a little bit of a juggling time. Why was Carlos Gomez such a positive in Jeff Luno's eyes, and how is A.J. Hinch going to juggle the playing time?
Well, they had to add some offense somewhere. You know, they'd added Kazmir starting pitching, ended up getting Mike Fiers, another starter, but they could use another bat. And, you know, their outfield situation is kind of fluid, especially with spring around. They're mix and match of guys, Rasmus and Tucker. And, if they could just get another bat to add stability, and I think Gomez was a good fit for them just because he has the ability to be a high on base guy, gold glove defender, hits some home runs, runs pretty well. So, in a way, he's different than Tucker, different than Rasmus. He's going to get on base more, hits a better average. And while George Springer's out, they need a guy like that. Gomez sort of has the same skill set to Springer. He's maybe not as good when Springer finally gets going, but Springer's going to be out, until probably the beginning of September when rosters expand. So this is going to be a crucial month, and they needed another outfielder, another bat, just to kind of bridge that gap when Springer comes back. And when Springer comes back, now look at what you have. You have George Springer, you have Gomez, you have Jake Marisnik, a gold glove caliber outfielder, and then you got Preston Tucker, who's done a great job as a rookie in the year of Rasmus. So you have all kinds of options in the outfield. But I think with Gomez, it gives them just another bat until Springer gets back, and then they'll be that much better.
Brian, do the Astros have any idea when George Springer will be back? And do you think this trade was made with the idea that, hey, we're not even sure we're going to get George Springer back this year?
Yeah, I think it was. I think they don't know yet. He's still in that path. He still has to see a doctor and get cleared. And once he does, he's got to ease back into it. We're talking about a fractured wrist, so we're talking about him taking a few days to swing a bat, put the glove on. He's going to have to go to minor league rehab, assuming the minor league season isn't over when he's able to do this. So he's going to be minor league rehab for, a week like Jed Lowry did. So he's a long ways away, and you're right. Maybe there's a setback. Maybe in his doctor checkup, maybe it takes longer than they thought it would. And, they're really counting on him, and they've missed his bat. So I think in the back of their minds, if Springer doesn't come back for some reason, we can still go to battle with Gomez, Marisnik, Tucker. We still like our outfield. But, there's been no reason to believe that he's not going to be back at the 6 to 8 week mark. We're looking at early September. But the next few weeks will be critical. You've got to get that cast off, start getting some baseball activity going. Then we'll have a better idea.
Brian, Lance McCullers has given up, I think, more than 3 runs in only one of his starts, and he's got one of the best curveballs in baseball already. As you've watched this kid pitch, and I don't know, I don't want to say he's mature, because apparently he was pretty mature when he got here. What are the things, either on the field or off, that impresses you the most about him?
Well, he's got good stuff, electric stuff. He looks like he belongs. Nothing seems to faze him. Kind of the same way Carlos Correa does. He just looks like he steps on the field at 21 years old, and he looks like he's a 3- or 4-year veteran, and he's not afraid to compete. And similar with Correa, off the field, he's very comfortable. He comes from a major league family, so being in a clubhouse, a major league clubhouse, is not a big deal for him. But he's very comfortable in the clubhouse, very relaxed. And one of the funny things he did after his last start was after the game was over, we were talking to AJ Hinch, and AJ was telling us that his breaking stuff early, the first couple innings, was really good. And so when we we got to Lance and we cornered him and we said, hey, you know, early on your breaking stuff was really good. And Lance was like, well, it wasn't good later in the game. And he started, you know, he kind of left.
When you know you got it going. As we record this, the Astros are 11-4 since the All-Star break, best record in the American League, four-game lead in the AL West. As you've seen, can you talk about how you've seen the confidence grow in these guys? And like, and I know you and I talked to people, and there was a lot of press coverage last week in the Angels-Astros series. These guys, they know they're good now, right? It's not fun and games. They know they're good enough to go to the postseason, right? It's amazing how that has happened.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they can smell it a little bit. I think one of the big games was the Castro walk-off home run win in the last homestand, and that's the first time I felt that, you know, they're celebrating a home plate. You have a guy in Castro who's been here longer than anybody, seen more losses than anybody, hits a walk-off home run to win 3-0 and before a packed crowd, and they're celebrating at home. And I know for me, I was like, okay, this is for real. These guys are in this to the end, and I think they believe that in this clubhouse now. You know, management goes out and brings in three key players who are going to help this team in the second half. That gives them confidence that they're going to be in this to the end. Jed Lowrie returns after the All-Star break. So, I think we've reached the point now. This is a cute, funny story to Astros. I mean, they're going to be in this for the last week of the season, whether they can finish it off or not. We'll see, because it's going to be uncharted territory for a lot of people. But I think right now, they believe they can win. They believe they can make the playoffs and be hard to bet against them at this point.
I'm joined by T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers. T.R., after all the comings and goings around baseball, the Rangers made a big upgrade in the rotation, getting Cole Hamels for now and for at least three more years in the future. And just looking at the club today, with Nick Martinez pitched well against the Giants, Martin Perez had won a hell of a game against the Giants. I assume Gerrit Collins is going to come back at some point. I would think that the Rangers, could, all things considered, where they've been this season, couldn't be in a better frame of mind, not for next year, but to make a postseason run this year. What's your assessment of it?
Well, they got a lot of work ahead of them. I mean, they're still under 500. They're still pretty far out of the division race. They're on the fringe of the wild card race. They certainly have a better rotation now than they did a week ago. I don't know when Derek will be back. It probably won't be until September. I don't know. You know, still a lot depends on, you know, guys like Adrian Beltre, Shin-Soo Chu, Josh Hamilton, Prince Fielder. Those are the big four of their offense, and they got to get those four guys, you know, really hitting. Hamilton's still looking for a swing. Beltre's still dealing with that thumb. You know, Fielder's been a little bit of a slump, and Shin-Soo Chu has been, you know, up and down, but a lot better since the All-Star break. You know, a lot of this is going to depend on those four guys, and a lot of it's going to depend on the bullpen. I mean, Tanner Shepherd is on the disabled list, and Keone Kayla has been sent to the minor leagues for R&R, I guess. So, you know, they got the two new guys, Jake Diekman and Sam Bison. Still a lot of work for this team to do to get back into this race.
And they had 10 more games with the Astros, who lead the division by four games over the Angels. Let me ask you this. Do you think fans, Rangers fans, have any particular feeling about the Astros in terms of a rivalry? Or do they look at their rivals as, you know, Angels, Yankees, whoever? Is it a big deal when the Astros play in Arlington? Because it's a big deal when the Rangers play in Houston. You know, they draw over 30,000 every game. How do you see it?
Well, I think it's getting there. You know, the history of the Rangers is their biggest rivalry has always been with a team that's good. You know, sometimes right. It's the Angels, sometimes it's the Mariners, sometimes it's Oakland, sometimes it's the Yankees. You know, they've never had a real geographic rival until the Astros came over to this league. And, you know, that's something that's slowly, you know, coming to pass. But, you know, the Cardinals and the Cubs, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers and the Giants, all those teams are original teams going back to, you know, back when you and I were Cub reporters covering Christy Mathewson. So, you know, it takes a long time for these big rivalries to develop. I think right now the Astros are very good. The Rangers are getting there. In the past, the Rangers have been good and the Astros have not. And we really haven't seen, since interleague play began, a situation where both the Rangers and the Astros were good. They were fighting for a pennant race and taking the division down to the wire.
I tell you what, it would make a good rivalry if the two managers square off again in front of home plate. That'll start a rivalry really fast.
Well, you know, that happened the other day with the Royals and the Blue Jays, and, of course, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. Those are, again, two teams that have been at it for a long, long time. And, you know, we all know that National League Central is a great division because of the proximity of all those industrial cities. You know, the Rangers had a little tiff with the Astros. I don't know if it was that big of a deal, but I think rivalries are born out of just two teams that are really playing well and both competing for a division title.
How did Cole Hamels feel? Cole Hamels didn't want to come to the Astros, as people know. I think most people know. And he could veto it. But he couldn't veto a trade to the Rangers. Is that right?
Yeah, he had the Rangers on his trade list.
And so how does he feel about it? How's he excited about it? What was your initial impression in meeting him?
Well, he's been very upbeat since he got here. He looks got a big smile on his face. Looks like he's enjoying it. I think Cliff Lee really told him a lot of good things about the Rangers organization and gave him a few tips on how to pitch in this weather. And, you know, I think he's got some family connection here. You know, this team has been very good for the past 4 or 5 years. I think he'll like it here. I think he's pretty upbeat about it all.
And Colby Lewis has continues to just be tremendous. Is there any part of this recovery from this hip surgery, this 2-year recovery, that has surprised even him at how well he's done?
Well, I think once he felt great, then nothing has surprised him. I think the big thing with him was how would I feel, and if he felt good enough to pitch, and he. I think he has confidence in his ability. So once he got out there and, you know, the hips started holding up and responding, I think then his confidence just grew.
Joined by Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Greg, the Mariners did a little bit of selling off. I don't know if you'd call it wholesale selling off. Was this an indication that they are looking to next year? Or was it just part of Jack Surinjic and Lloyd McClendon want to, you know, look at some new guys because it was the mix they had wasn't working?
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, 10 games under at the trade deadline. It's no question that this season hasn't gone how they had hoped. And, you know, they had some assets they saw they could move for some future pieces. So I think it's no question, you know, it's trying to get stronger in the future and bring in some prospects. But they also tried to help themselves a little for the now, and it did bring in a couple guys, a couple relievers that are on the roster now, and they like this outfielder Ramon Flores they got from the Yankees. In the Dustin Ackley swap, they think he could be a guy that helps them here. But he's in AAA right now, so there's no question. I mean, you can't couch it any other way than you know things have not gone the way they went, and dealing Mark Lowe, I think, pretty significant. Sign that they need to pick up pieces for the future. Mark's going to be a free agent, and certainly they like the haul they got back from the Blue Jays, three left-hand pitchers, three youngsters that they think can help down the road. And Lowe's going to be a free agent. Who knows, maybe he'll end up back in Seattle next year as a guy that has a home in Vancouver, Washington, and likes the area, and that's why he signed with Seattle in the first place. So, you know, I don't think there's any question that this year's not gone the way they wanted. They got to the trade deadline and said, hey, let's see what we can do to help ourselves.
And one of the pieces of good news it looks like we've been here recently is that this kid Ketel Marte, I guess is he the ninth different leadoff guy that McClendon has tried, and it looks like maybe they found a guy.
He would be the tenth leadoff hitter this year, and that includes
only 10,
a couple
okay.
guys. It's just 10, yeah. Yeah, no question. Lloyd's been looking for that piece, and you know, to the point where he had Logan Morrison leading off quite a bit. And Logan's obviously not your classic leadoff guy, but just a guy they thought could get on base and maybe help him some there. And they tried Seth Smith there, another on base kind of guy, not really a classic leadoff hitter. You know, Austin Jackson probably the closest thing they have to a real leadoff hitter, and they like him down the lineup some more too. So Ketel Marte they brought up, and this kid does look like a leadoff hitter. He's a switch hitter, kind of guy that keeps the ball in play, can run, can steal some bases. And yesterday, he's been up three games. Yesterday, he looked like the real deal. Got on base four times. He's 3 for 4, a couple infield hits, showed his speed. 11th inning when he needed it, walked. The wild pitch got in front of Suzuki, the Twins catcher, and Marte took second on it. And they got in scoring position, scored the go-ahead run and the 11th inning win. So that's the kind of spark they need. There's no doubt they're looking for that guy. And he's a 21-year-old kid that they'd like coming up. The interesting thing, I guess, is where they're going to fit him. He's kind of a second baseman, they feel, naturally, and they got that guy named Cano that's pretty well fit there. So they've had him playing a little center field down in Tacoma before they brought him up, and I think we're going to see that here fairly soon, get him some center field action. He can play some shortstop as well. So, but definitely looks like the kind of guy they could use at the top of the lineup.
And, Greg, the last 2 weeks we've seen the real Robinson Cano. He's been crazy hot. How did this happen? Is he willing to talk about what adjustments he made, or do you think he just calmed down and became who he was supposed to be?
And more of the latter, and unfortunately, right about when he started getting hot, he strained his a muscle in his abdomen, so and he had to sit out 3 days and came back. He still hasn't played second base yet, as we speak here, going into the Rockies series on Monday. So they need to get him back out in the field. But he was swinging it, as you mentioned, real good. Then they pulled a muscle, it strained a muscle in his stomach, so that's kind of slowed him down a little bit. But They need to get him back where he was, and Cruz hitting the heck out of the ball again here has been he's been red hot. So you know that is the key to this team. There's no question offensively, and why he settled in now. I think they just keep saying he's a better hitter than he was his first couple months, and why those first couple months happened, I don't know. But he's get back up, and he has been red hot, and good to see.
Joined by Jane Lee, who covers the A's for MLB.com. Jane, in the wake of the trade deadline, are there goals that Bob Melvin and Billy Beane have down the stretch, players they want to see, things they need to learn in these last 2 months?
Yeah, I think there is a lot to accomplish in the last 2 months, even though, you know, they really won't be contending here. They do have a lot of young guys they want to take a look at, guys like Aaron Brooks, who made his debut and was really, really excellent for them in his start a couple days ago. You know, guys like that, to where they are looking toward next year and beyond, and they want to see what pieces they have, you know, for next year. And, you know, you look all over and you really don't know what this team is going to look like next year. There's so many young guys, you know, they're still trying to figure out, is Marcus Semien the right answer at shortstop? You know, pieces in the outfield. And, you know, especially in the starting rotation now, they have all these young guys, you know, with Kazmir departing and Jesse Hahn being on the disabled list. So it's kind of about evaluating a lot of the young talent and also hoping that guys like Coco Crisp and Sean Doolittle return at some point. Coco's actually expected back very soon, and Doolittle within the next month, they believe. And, you know, just getting those guys on the field. And I know for Sean especially, I think, you know, there's a lot to pitching and pitching healthy and pitching well and going into the offseason with a good feeling. You know, same for Coco. He's been dealing with a lot these past couple years. And, I mean, he could be back with this team next year. So, you know, I think they need to see those two guys healthy and, you know, take a look at what they have so that they can decide, you know, what their plan is for the near future and beyond. Because, you know, when Billy made these trades these past couple weeks, you know, every time he was asked, do you expect to contend next year? His answer was, I don't know. You know, he just doesn't know what he has. And it might take until, you know, the end of the season and into the offseason for them to really figure out what they're working with here.
Yeah, and I think it's important for us to know that this was not a roster build-up. These were future free agents he traded. It seemed like he wanted to keep the core of the team that basically, just judging on what he did, he still likes his team. You think I'm reading that wrong?
No. I mean, he was very adamant when he was making these trades. You know, every time he was asked if more were coming, you know, he was kind of forward about saying, you know, We don't plan to trade any guys that are expected back next year. And I know that it's tough for fans to see, you know, a pitcher of Scott Kazmir and Tyler Clippard's caliber go and Ben Zobrist, but I think they also have to realize in 2 months, you know, they were going to go anyway, and it was a matter of whether the A's were going to get something back for them or not. And so, you know, as disappointed as it was for them, you know, Billy would tell them, well, you're going to be mad at me at the end of the year too when they go and I don't get anything for them. So I think that was important for them to be realistic about their situation and get something in return. And they netted, you know, five really good prospects from those deals. And normally when they, you know, they make moves, and I think people were expecting them to bring in either big league ready or close to major league ready players to help immediately and next year, and they didn't do that. You know, they've kind of strayed from what they normally do in realizing that, you know, maybe we should, you know, put guys that do have more upside, even if, you know, they're a ways away from being in the big league. So that's why you're seeing so many low or high A guys, but with real big upside that could be, you know, big pieces for them in the future.
The A's are 11-25 in one-run games, and there were a lot of reasons people like me thought they were going to get back in it at some point. But that's just a bizarre number. It can't reflect anything other than luck. How do you look at 11-25 in one-run games?
Yeah, I mean, some of it is luck, but you do look at their bullpen issues early in the year, and that really did hurt them, and some of the errors, too. You know, they have gotten better in both areas. Their bullpen's still not a big strength. But, you know, the bullpen is responsible for nearly 20 of their losses, which is a big number. And, you know, they do play in close games, you know, because their offense really isn't going to – it's not expected to put up a bunch of runs. So, but they have, you know, the starting pitching to keep them in games. So you're seeing all these – close, low-scoring games, and you know, their bullpen, which was one of their biggest strengths, if not the biggest of theirs in the last 2 or 3 years. You know, it just, I mean, relievers are so volatile. You see it everywhere. So guys we were used to seeing doing so well for them, guys like Dan Otero, Ryan Cook, Eric O'Flaherty, you know, they're having off years. I mean, Cook was sent to the minors, and he's since been traded to Boston. O'Flaherty was designated for assignment this week. You know, Otero's back in the big leagues, but still kind of struggling to find that consistency. So I think the bullpen was, you know, a major downfall for them this year, and I think they'll be the first to admit it, too. I mean, Melvin has alluded to that after a lot of those one-run losses. And I know a lot of those, you know, luck does come into play, but when you've played nearly 40 of those games, you know, there is something else to it. And I think that, you know, this year the bullpen and a lot of the defensive mistakes did end up hurting them.
Jesse Chavez has a history of struggling after the break. I think his career ERA is 3.72 before, 5.97 after, and he struggled a little bit lately. Any explanation for why his second half of his seasons aren't as good as his first? And his first are pretty good.
Yeah, they're excellent. I mean, last year he was putting up all-star numbers. And, you know, last year there was an explanation. You know, that was his first season as a starter, full season as a starter. So his body, his arm just wasn't used to the innings. And, you know, he went into the offseason with that in mind and really changed his off-season routine and, you know, was eating a ton. I mean, you look at the guy, he's there's not much on him. So he was, you know, eating like crazy, put on 10 pounds, and, you know, came into spring training, you know, with that added weight, hoping to keep it on throughout the season. You know, I don't know that he's fatigued or he's tired. He says physically he feels great. Right now he thinks it's just maybe something mechanically or maybe something mental or a little bit of both. And he's just kind of in one of those stretches right now where he's struggling. But I don't think there's concern. I mean, you still look at him and you look at his stuff and it's there. It's just, you know, putting it all together. And he just hasn't been able to do that these past few times. But, you know, I know a lot of people are questioning, you know, is he fatigued? This always happens. But really, it did happen last year, and there was a reason for it. And, you know, I think the A's do want to see what he can do with a full season as a starter. So I think it's important for him, you know, going back to all these things that, you know, they want to see in the second half. You know, and it's just as much for them as it is for Jesse, you know, being able to prove himself, you know, as someone who can, you know, maintain, you know, his place in the rotation for a full season.
Listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League West.